So thanks for coming down, everyone. I'm very proud to introduce Al today. He also happens to be a former boss. I'm sitting under him, right? So Al started his own consulting firm straight out of college. He went to school here at Stern, and he's been very active at the school, mentoring the MBA program for the project competition, right? And also he recently brought Henry Kravis from KKR over to the MBA school as well. So anyway, we're very glad to have him here today, and for the interview.
Hi, how's everyone doing? Good afternoon, and thank you for inviting me to speak to you today. I'm going to read from some prepared statements because if I don't, I'll go off into tangents and be here all afternoon. And I know some of you have midterms today, so excuse me if I don't make eye contact every minute. I hope to broaden your perspective today of my chosen profession and truly help you decide on whether you can make a career out of it or perhaps something else. First, I'd like to get into some audience participation. Just what are your favorite hobbies or interests, the ones that you're really passionate about, the ones that if you had the entire day to yourself, you spend doing them. Just shout them out. What? What?
Yes, Halo.
Halo, okay.
What? Music.
Music, Halo, video games, what else?
Going to the beach.
Okay. If you had, how much time do you say you dedicate to these passions of yours?
I took a class 7 hours a week.
How many hours? Come on, just shout it out. How many hours do you spend on your favorite hobbies, your most passionate interests? 0 to 1, 17 hours, a full day.
3 hours.
We have 1,440 minutes per day. The average American spends 400 of those sleeping, 440 of those working, 120 of those commuting, 200 of those watching TV, 120 more eating and engaging in other bodily activities, and another 120 of those online. That leaves this average American roughly 40 minutes to spend to themselves. Consultants spend nearly 1,000 minutes working, 300 minutes sleeping, and the rest is spent eating, commuting, and personal time. Think about that for a moment. Think about how many hours per week you need to work in order to work this many minutes. 1,000 minutes is 17 hours per day. That's 7 a.m. to midnight every day. The great misconception about consulting is that consultants make tons of money and great benefits while getting all this fabulous experience. However, when exactly does the consultant get the time to enjoy any of it? Make no mistake, working at the average consultancy is not working. It's indentured servitude. You don't join the firm, you sell your soul to them. But wait, time doesn't just grow on trees. It's not like you can just go to the Sprint store and purchase more life minutes. So you don't actually sell your life, especially since you don't have the time to spend the money you've made for it. You give it away. I'm willing to bet that the single most frustrating interview experience you've all encountered is being told you don't have enough experience. The near universal reaction to this revelation is, how can I get the experience if no one wants to give me a chance to get it? Whoa. Sorry. I've hopefully proven that experience isn't something you get handed exclusively by someone older or by an employer. That was the objective of the slides. And clearly, you've got other interests you're passionate about. And for some of you, money is no object. Why then do you want to be a consultant? I ask the same question in every interview. If you die tomorrow, what will people remember you by? What will be your contribution to the world? What about after 10 more years? After maybe 20 years? The rest of you, if you haven't thought about it, you know, why don't you know? Why haven't you thought about what you want your life to be remembered as? As I just demonstrated, time is your most valuable resource. So why are you wasting it not knowing what you want to do with your time or what you'd like to get out of your life? More importantly, why are you letting your parents, your teachers, your preachers, and your bosses steer your life into areas you're not passionate about? If I had let my parents steer my life, I'd be a security guard in the lobby upstairs. If I had let my teacher steer my life, I would have dropped out of school. If I let my bosses steer my life, I'd probably have thankfully risen to the manager I used to be at Blockbuster, beholden to the whims of the market that I'd never be able to understand, because I never gave myself the chance to explore my passion. But explore I did. And what I realized is that I liked asking why. I love to question authority. So my first decision wasn't impulsive, but rather a reflection of my truest self, to start my own company. And as Cliff mentioned, I started it right out of college. Later on, I discovered consulting, a profession to me epitomized my passion for getting to the bottom of questions. But the more I learned about being a consultant, the harder it became, particularly since I wanted to do everything my way. But I wasn't about to stop doing something I'm passionate about just because it's hard. In fact, it's the easy things that we lose interest in the quickest. It's the easy things that make us bored. And it's the easiest things that ultimately lead to our own demise. So what is consulting? The handouts I'll pass out later will define it for you, so I'm not going to belabor the point. But let me dwell on this quote for a moment. Since I've never actually worked at another consulting firm, I make it my business to read everything I can about consulting. This is some of the over 10 books I've read on the subject. I go to the conferences also. There are consulting conferences. There are consulting magazines. I chat with other consulting professionals, other service professionals. And with every step I take, I learn that the vast majority of consultants out there aren't really consultants. They're like playback machines, regurgitators, spewing back everything they've obtained at previous employers in grad school, but never really reflected on their long experience and uneventful backgrounds. In other words, they don't really think. And if they don't think, how could they be thought leaders? This quote from this book, actually, summarizes all of the other books, believe it or not, and exemplifies what the typical consultant's experience is as a consultant. Why? Recalling everything I started this discussion with, the reason many consultants end up hating consulting is because they never thought about the time commitment. They focus too much on their education and qualifications. They neglected to enter the profession as a career, but rather a stepping stone, which, despite their ultimate disdain of it, is hypocritically brandished at every interview. And most importantly, they fail to acknowledge their passion or think about their life as having a purpose. Ironically, every CEO on earth thinks about their passions and their purpose only when they become CEO. So by the time they recognize they've led an uneventful, passionless, purposeless life, they need to hire personal coaches, self-help gurus, and purchase purpose-driven books to help them navigate the remaining short years of their lives. This afternoon, I'm offering you a gift. If I could just find the other page, I'll tell you what it is. You are now aware of things you need to think about before committing yourself to a life as a consultant. If you're seeking wealth, experience, fame, or just something to show your parents, go join a bank. They'll hire anybody. But if you're seeking to change your life, to change the lives of those around you, to change the world, then start calling yourself a consultant right now. Because working at a consulting firm isn't a fancy cubicle with a fancy BlackBerry and hopscotching the globe in first-class accommodations. Your passion and your purpose of your life, those are the things that makes you who you are and what you are. And with that, I'm done. As I mentioned in this discussion, I'm not here to recruit you to be a consultant. I'm here to tell you basically what the things you need to think about are to be a consultant. Many of you have, started now, hopefully, expanding your perspective and thinking about things outside of what you've always thought and what you thought you knew. And with that, I actually would like to open the floor to any questions about my own experiences, personal, and professional. And, you know, basically what my company specifically does. Thank you.
What does your company specifically do?
Oh, good. Excellent question. My company is a pure strategy consulting firm. We do corporate strategy, and we focus on behavioral economics. What that essentially means is we go in, we do the studies, we do not implement. Our studies are primarily focused on population behavior. We've broken the populations that we study into different segments based on the hats they wear, whether they're church-going people, you know, politically inclined, whether they're, you know, socioeconomic backgrounds. We essentially try to isolate the different things that influence the population and quantify those things so that we can then tell our clients, this is why your customers, your shareholders, your employees do the things they do. Most consulting firms initially focus on short-term insights. This is what's going on. And then they focus a solution on this is what's going on. We do frameworks so that the company can actually base their entire, you know, business life cycle on this framework. We essentially try to strive to answer why, which is my own personal beliefs, and I found those to be answerable through this particular line of research. Make sense? This is something you're not going to hear any other firm because, you know, I've never worked at any other firm, so I don't know what exactly was supposed to be. However, I can tell you that after reading all these books that other firms primarily focus on performance improvement, organization, and culture. That's essentially saying we want to fire a bunch of people. We want to study minute changes in, you know, productivity. We want to understand the culture. Why is it lagging? Why is it not enthusiastic? Again, these are very short-term things, very, you know, narrow perspectives, and I don't blame them. Most consulting assignments are one-offs. They last 3 to 6 months. If you're not looking at putting a Band-Aid on something like a doctor does, you're never going to get called back. So consultants put the Band-Aid on, Band-Aid breaks, they call them back, and they continue to make money off of this process. In that process, some of the consultants eventually stay at the firm, at the client firm, become employees, rise up to the top to management, and rehire the same consulting firm. So essentially, you have a perpetual line of business coming in, and you never get, you know, you always continue to make money. Consultants do make money, by the way. There was this, a couple of years ago, the most blatant observation was Chelsea Clinton, who was hired at McKinsey & Company at $120,000 starting salary for no other reason than she has the last name of Clinton. That's a lot of money. But you got to think about this for a second. If anybody could offer another person $120,000 for no experience, how much more are they making that they don't miss that money? So if you are seeking not to work at a firm, but rather to start a firm, there's nothing that says you cannot do that. It is extremely lucrative if you know how to do it right. I regrettably did not know how to do it right. So I've been poor for a very long time. But hopefully that'll change. I'm optimistic about that. Any other questions about, yes?
Do consultants like also work with like local businesses, or are they just working?
It depends. There is such a thing as small business consultants. But if you work at a large firm, if your partners, if your senior bosses are looking to take home $1 million or $2 million a year, you know, you really have to go after the big, big, big companies, GE, JP Morgan. Those are the prime clients. There's nothing that says you can't go after the smaller companies, like say, I don't know, publishers of these books, and maybe the folks who chain small chains of restaurants, or even the guys who make those garbage cans and these tables. Those are viable clients as well. Those clients are mid-level, mid-market. Those are the guys who are not sexy, but they're making $300-400 million a year, and they can spend $2 or $3 million on a consulting project. Small clients, let's say the local deli, if you are a deli owner, you open a, you know, a bodega somewhere, why do you need a consultant for? You got a store, you got a loan, you buy inventory, that's it, so start selling stuff. Not only are you less inclined to ask for advice, you're less inclined to pay for it. So, you know, I typically have maybe 10 or 20 pro bono consultants, clients at any given time. These clients are like that. You know, they made the decision to ask for advice, but they don't really want to pay for it. Why do I spend probably 15-20% of my week advising free of charge to mentoring these small business owners. not just, you know, off the street, but in various nonprofits that I volunteer at to offer to advise and coach entrepreneurs. It occurred to me a while ago that I don't have 80 years experience to bank on to get clients in the door, to have my phone ringing off the hook. So I have to start where they started. Believe it or not, McKinsey was an accountant. James O. McKinsey started out as an accountant, I think, with two advanced degrees. He was a cost accountant. He was one of the few people in the 1910s and the 1920s to actually start telling these entrepreneurs at the time, remember, this is the industrial age. You had a lot of guys starting a lot of, you know, manufacturing processes. An assembly line was becoming, you know, a new thing, which, by the way, was totally different than Taylorism. Taylorism is, we'll get to that. Anyway, so McKinsey's here telling people, you gotta, you know, there's a better way to do it. I have two degrees. Why don't you let me, you know, tell you about it? It was pure accounting. Somewhere along the line, someone asked him, you know, you can find problems in the account, in the book, so maybe you can advise on something more. In the 1930s, McKinsey accepted a job, I think, with Marshall Fields. I'm not sure. And promptly thereafter, at the age of 40, he died of a heart attack. Marvin Bauer, the guy who this book commemorates, this is like a PR kit for this guy. There is nothing written that can tell you anything really fair about any consulting firm. You just got to make it up, get the pieces as you go along. This guy, Marvin Bauer, was the guy who turned McKinsey into what it is today. In 1936, I believe at the age of 36, he took the McKinsey name and went to New York, came to New York from Chicago. Chicago, by the way, is recognized as the epicenter of where consulting as a profession originated. A.T. Kearney, another accountant at McKinsey, James O. McKinsey & Company, stayed in Chicago and started A.T. Kearney. When Marvin Bauer came here and McKinsey died, the name was up for grabs. He kept the name. Why? Because he didn't want people to come to him and say, he wanted people to believe that he worked for somebody else as opposed to being the boss. That was my first mistake. People are more inclined to hire you when they know they can blame you for something, as opposed to knowing that, well, if you're the guy to go to, if you're the guy that I got to blame, then I'm not really going to blame you. They'd rather. So he recognized this epiphany. And he, by the way, had not to let this, you know, get out of context, but he had a JD from Harvard and an MBA from Harvard at a time when that was almost, you know, unheard of. So he went to the end. He discovered his passion for consulting because he used to work at Jones Day, a very prestigious law firm, analyzing bankruptcy cases. So he said, you know, if these companies just did this and that right, they wouldn't go bankrupt. So that's sort of where he developed his passion, went, got his graduate in business, went to work at McKinsey, came to New York, founded the firm, refounded the firm, and focused exclusively on fixing little problems here and there within the organization. Thus, you know, they really coined the term organizational culture, the culture of an organization, and really fixing these little problems was how they got started. Booz Allen and company were engineers. They were all about cost, fixing the engineering problems within companies. Arthur Anderson was an accountant. He didn't even, you know, he, believe it or not, should have been what McKinsey is today if it wasn't for the fact that the Justice Department said they couldn't do what they were doing, both consulting and accounting, cost reduction consulting and accounting. Eventually, they sold off the branch, and Arthur Anderson died. And then when IBM got into the business of consulting, they say, what the hell are we doing? Then, you know, now they're Accenture. So all these firms, they all started the same way, which brings back to your point. They started essentially by going after those small guys on the street. And they saying to them, you know, you've got a problem here and I can find it. You know, the small guys, by the way, were the guys who basically owned the building, manufacturing facility. And they went in, they said, this is what's going on, we can fix it for you. Somewhere along the line, there were many, 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 many hundreds of other consultants, particularly after the war, just before and after the war. In fact, it's when we have the largest recessions, the depressions, that consulting is an even more profitable business. Because, you know, consultants are the ones who come in and fire everybody. And that's what really the big bosses want to do. Now, there was really no such thing as a corporate culture. There was organization, but not corporate culture, until at least the 50s and 60s after the war, when the original founders of the firms all died. So you pass on the company to other executives. When they became a formal corporation,
there was a lot of politics involved. And when there's politics involved, and you know, things like accountability involved, things like, you know, we gotta pay these people how much, you know, all that, then you bring in the consultants. Now, you should understand consulting, unlike law, unlike accounting, it does not have a professional designation. You don't have to go get a specific degree like JDs or a CPA to be a consultant, which is why I made that comment. If you're passionate about changing the world, changing your lives, changing the people around you, you can call yourself a consultant right now. Because that's really all I believe it's like to be a consultant. If you're resourceful, you want to make a difference in the world. Or even just in your own small community, in your own community, in your own lives. That's all it really takes. Because there is no such thing as professional designation. So it took 80, 90 years for consultants to really be recognized as some sort of force. But during that entire time, what you have to understand is that consultants serve two primary functions. First function is to transfer knowledge in. Second function is to transfer accountability out. Let me focus on that first one, transfer knowledge in. Ever since Rockefeller, you know, went nutty and started that whole monopoly thing, companies have forced, Justice Department, government has forced companies, has prevented companies from getting together into trusts and monopolizing and crushing competition. So the only way that companies can legally have a monopoly, or so to speak, squash their competitors, is to hire the consultant who work for the competitor. So one of my clients was Showtime. Showtime they were launching new programming and they wanted to explore, you know, they wanted a study done on that. A few years later, I had the opportunity to present to HBO. And I'll never forget this, and this was where I first learned it, and to this day it shocks me, because it's like, oh my God. They said to me, you know, Al, why do you think we hired you? Because we wanted you to tell us what you did for Showtime. And I said, oh my God, you know, here I am thinking I have something new to contribute, but they don't want anything new. They just want to basically crush their competition and monopolize that business, the business of, you know, paying premium cable. So that was ideally one of the primary functions of consultants, to bypass the law, where they can now get information, do these collusion agreements, and, you know, essentially monopolize an industry. Why do you think GE is so good? You think they did that because they had all these smart people working there? No. None of the companies that are leaders in their industry did it solely by being leaders. They spend hundreds of millions of dollars working with consultants every year so that they can take in all this information from all their industries and put it inside them and crush their competition. The second benefit is transfer accountability. The second thing that consultants do is transfer accountability out. Nobody, and I mean nobody, likes to be held responsible for anything. As soon as something happens, it's his fault. It's his fault. It's her fault. I didn't do it. Look what's happening at HP right now. Look what's happening in Congress right now. You know, nobody wants to be at fault. Nobody wants to be at blame. Why? Because that's our culture. We don't like to be at fault. We don't like to be at blame. Where does this all come from? Think about it. Think about your earliest memories in kindergarten. If you were in kindergarten in this country, because there's a lot of diversity in this country. If you were in kindergarten or first grade in this country, in any schooling you've ever had, Think about how your teacher treated the class. Think about how she always wanted to know who made that noise, who threw that, who did this, who did that. And think about how she meted out rewards and punishments. The ones who tattletaled were the ones who got rewarded. The ones who were responsible were the ones who got punished. That it programmed into the individuals so that when you go into corporate America, you don't want to lose your job. You don't want to risk your pay. You're going to be damn sure you're not responsible for anything. But you sure want to take the credit for things. So eventually what happens is accountability becomes an issue. Ethics become an issue. People question, where did it all come from? We're so surprised. Isn't this surprising? You know, laws are not broken until after the fact. That's to say, a law is not made until after it's broken, put it that way. Everything that's happening, and I'll use the example of Sarbanes-Oxley, which I'm sure most of you should be familiar with. Sarbanes-Oxley was a law implemented after everybody did deed. But when the deed was being done, nobody seemed to care because everybody was making money. So when the deed got done and nobody made money anymore, that was the problem. So let's make a law, retroactively apply it so it looks like it was broken, and let's send a whole bunch of people to jail. Why? Why did all that happen? Because nobody likes to be responsible for anything. So what businesses prosper when nobody wants to be held accountable for anything? Insurance and accounting. There's an insurance policy for everything. for everything. If you breathe too hard and it causes an injury, you're insured for that. If you fart in the wrong direction, you're insured for that. Everything is insurable. But sometimes insurance is not enough, especially when you have really aggressive shareholders who come after you for any little decision you make. You can't do anything. I bet you 5 cents, I bet you nickel, that Yahoo is going to get sued for not purchasing YouTube right now. Why? Why? Why are they going to get sued for just missing the deal? Because that's the way shareholders are. That's how everybody is. You just want to sue people for anything. You're at fault. It's your fault. You're not, YouTube was really cool and you lost a chance. I'm going to sue you because you lost that chance. So, insurance, when insurance is not enough, what else do you get? You get a consultant. A consultant will do a study, will analyze the entire marketplace and say, Yahoo's not really a good idea for you to buy YouTube. So, when they get sued for not buying YouTube, the company, Terry, he can say, well, we got a study that says we didn't have to. So you really can't sue us because we did our due diligence. These consultants here told us that we didn't have to buy it. So even if you do get sued and your insurance isn't enough, guess what? It's the consultant's fault. So now you hire consultants to essentially make you blameless for everything. Why do you think Enron happened? Despite the fact that all those McKinsey guys are running around. Because that's what most executives perceive consultants as. Not to really lend any contributions. Let me tell you something. If I want to break the law, I'm going to break the law. I'm just going to find a way around that law by hiring somebody to take the fall for it. There is nothing that says that you right now, every single one of you, can go out there and kill 20, 30, 40 people if you want. Why not? Yeah, but might as well do 100, even 100. And you won't go to jail. Why? Because you can hire a consultant who'll come in and say, we did this, we studied that, we looked at this, and guess what? 100 people is not that bad. What do you think pharmaceuticals do? What do you think, companies that do a lot of pollution do? So just think about that. That's essentially what consultants do. Now, I do what I do, not because I want to go kill people, not because I want to break the law. I really believe that my profession, my chosen profession, that's why they call it a chosen profession, answers for me all the questions I've always wanted answered. And I'll tell you how it started. I started working when essentially, the dot-com bubble burst. So nobody was hiring. I mean, I was either overqualified or underqualified to do everything. I couldn't even be a secretary. Come on, anything. Please hire me. Please. Nobody wants to hire me for anything. So I said, I'm wasting my time. Wait a minute. What was my point? Right. But it was something I said before.
Answers all the questions.
Right. Answers. My thing was, why didn't anyone want to hire me? Why was I overqualified or underqualified? The more I started looking at this, the more I started blaming my family, my parents. They wanted me to be a security guard. It's a sure job. It's a done deal, They had the application ready for me. I'm like, I don't even want to be a security guard. So I started blaming them. And then I realized, I really can't blame them. They're dysfunctional. I mean, raise your hand if your family is not dysfunctional. That's what I thought. All families are dysfunctional. I wanted to know why mine was so dysfunctional. Why, because of that dysfunction, I was dysfunctional. Why I then couldn't go find a job. I wanted to know all these questions. Why companies were firing. This week alone, I think it's Wednesday, right? And this week, maybe like 16 CEOs have quit or gotten fired since Monday. I don't know if you've been reading the news. But, besides that whole HP thing, who else got fired?
Airbus
got fired. Who else got fired? There was a guy this morning who got fired. Sprint guy resigned.
Yeah.
The guy over at Sovereign Bank, he got fired. I mean, what the hell's going on? That's just the all these guys are getting fired. Everybody, I wanted to understand that. I wanted to understand where the economy was headed, what all this was about. And I decided that I would get all my answers from consulting, from asking those questions that nobody wants to ask. That people get annoyed at you for asking. Stop asking so many questions, Al. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to ask questions. I wanted to get my answers. And you know what I found? I found that all my questions were answered as soon as I applied. My degree's in economics. I later on discovered behavioral economics, and I did a lot of research in that. I found all my answers in that. So I do what I do primarily because I like finding answers. Now, I don't care what you use my answers for. That's your prerogative. But as long as you give me the chance to find them for you, using my approach, that's why I do it. Now, whatever you do, you're paying me a lot of money to do it. So now I'm going to take my money and be a contributor to the economy, then trickle it down any which way I want. Whether it be charities, whether it be helping entrepreneurs, whether it's spending time with these wonderful students, you know. Whatever I want to do, that's what I have the flexibility to do it as an consultant. That's why I ask you about your passion. Nobody wants to work 90 hours a week, 100 hours a week. Nobody. I don't care who you are, what you say, what you've been told. Nobody wants to spend 90 hours, 100 hours a week working. So why are you working that long? Now, if you had two kids and you were a single parent, I'd understand. You know, but you're not. So why are you doing it? Why are you looking forward to doing it? What is your passion? What do you want to do? What's your purpose in life? You know? If your purpose in life is to do something different, to make a change, to be that CEO or to start your own company, well, that's what you got to go into consulting doing. And utilize consulting the way you're supposed to utilize it, not simply as a line on your resume. And then 15 paragraphs describing every project you've ever worked on. Nobody cares. Nobody pays me because they care what I have to say. People pay me because they want to say it. They want to be the ones who know it. They want to be the ones who brag about it, who take the credit for it. And that's fine. Because as long as they're paying me, it accomplishes my purpose, my goals. Anything else? Excellent question. Do you really want to know that though?
Yes.
How I started, what challenges I faced?
Were you MBA and undergrad?
I just got my undergrad. After I started, I decided I don't need an MBA. 2 years after I started, I was a professor at Brown College. What does that tell you about the value of an education? If anybody off the street can go be a teacher. That's not to discredit your wonderful professor, but, you know, without 2 years out of school, without an MBA, I was a professor. What were some of the challenges I started? When I started teaching college, you'd be like, huh? What happened there? I can tell you later, but the challenges I faced were the most obvious. I want to be a consultant. I want to sell my services. I want to sell what I know, sell my abilities, sell my skills, but I have no one to sell them to. So my number one problem was I needed to meet people. Now, usually, by the time someone makes a decision to be a consultant or start their own company as a consultant, they've either worked at one of these firms, so they go into their business with clients, with associates, with money, with a budget, you know, or they work in industry, coming out of industry, now they have relationships they can tap into. I started with all my peers starting out too. Everyone I knew was either an analyst, first year this, first year that, nobody was in a position to hire me. Worse still, I was a very, very, very big party promoter. I did a lot of parties. You guys party like you wouldn't believe. I don't know about you guys, but my guys party like you drank like fish. I mean, it was ridiculous. but I made like a little, you know, reputation for being a party promoter. So here I am now, you know, after school, I want to be a serious professional consultant. And the first question everybody asked me, so Al, when's the next party? Al, forget about it. So my first professional hurdle was meeting people who were serious enough to hire me. So I did that. I went out to events, I went out to conferences. A couple of years later, I started joining professional business networking groups and organizations, but now I face another problem. What the hell do you know about my business? You know, I'm half the age of most of the guys I'm trying to do business for. What do I know about anything, really? That's when I really started learning that consulting isn't about what you know, it's about how you learn, and then how you're able to translate that. People don't pay for textbook stuff, people pay for ideas. Where did ideas come from? Does anyone really have a monopoly on all ideas? No. People pay for perspective. Yes.
I think when you say that you kind of have to use abilities you have from like all different factions of life.
Yes.
Some people kind of have, you know, just a knack at like putting it all together.
Yes.
To see how this situation incorporates all of
it. Yes. You're absolutely correct. The only thing I did have was time. I was unemployed. So I sat back on my brand new $5,000 couch that I could no longer pay for. I said, what am I going to do with all this time? I started reflecting. Boy, let me tell you, when you're unemployed, you have no friends, you have no job, nothing to do, you reflect a lot about everything. I mean, no rock was left unturned. I thought about everything. And then that's when I came to all these epiphanies about the profession and what I really want to do. So here I am talking to all these guys twice my age, sending them, I could be your consultant. You should pay me a lot of money to tell you stuff that you don't know. Or maybe to confirm stuff you do know. But that wasn't going to do it. Then, you know, I also, I got my degree was in economics. I double majored in marketing and economics. Marketing tells you, statistically speaking, you gotta get 100 people before one call is back, right? So that's what I did. I started meeting more than just 10 people, 20 people, 30 people. I started meeting hundreds, hundreds of people. They say that the average person knows by the time they're 50 about 200 close people. I didn't know that fact. I'm under 30. I know 3,000 people. And out of all those 3,000 people, I finally started getting some business. Statistically, the statistic worked. So the challenge I met, my first challenge was meeting the people. My second challenge was proving that I knew something. My third challenge was keeping track of all the people I met. Some people you classify as, I don't know if I really want to talk to you. Other people you classify as, yes, that's the guy I want to talk to. But guess what? Your benchmarks are pretty much the same as everybody else. So everybody wants to talk to these guys. Nobody wants to talk to these guys. So I did what seemed like an irrational thing. I started talking more to these guys instead of these guys. And sure enough, that's paying off too. I started writing more. Most people call me prolific. I write a lot. Not because I have to, but because I was frustrated. Because nobody wanted to listen to me. Nobody believed I knew anything. So the only way I could prove that I knew something was to write about what I knew. And before long, I realized I really didn't know anything. It was only after I started writing that I realized, man, I really don't know anything. So I got to know stuff. And then I started reading stuff. I remember one time I was here talking to, a freshman class that was just coming in. It was like the third day in. And somebody asked me, what's your favorite book, Al? You figure if you're in business school, you want to know. My favorite book, books are biographies. I read a lot of biographies. I probably read 30 or 40 biographies today. I read them on the train, read them on the toilet. You know, you'd be surprised when you find the time to read books. And you know what I realized? After a while, you notice that history really does repeat itself. Lots of people live the same life, just different ways. Lots of things that you should know is common sense. People pay a lot of money to teach you common sense. Most importantly, I read that after all those biographies, after all those histories of people I've read about, I can theoretically claim to have the aggregate experience of 1,000 years worth of management just by reading all these books. Does that make sense? I mean, who's going to question that I don't know how to do something if I read about Abraham Lincoln or Goldman Sachs or, you know, McKinsey? Can you tell me I don't know how? I already read your mistakes. Why would I make them? I already read about your successes. Why would I not tell my clients about those successes too? So that's how I sort of got over my hurdles and challenges. That was 6 years ago. And today, I find it a whole lot easier to talk about what I do, to find business, to give my knowledge away for free. Because honestly, again, I don't believe that a consultant is the sum of what he knows. I believe a consultant is, you know, what he's willing to learn. If I tell you all my secrets, guess what? I gotta go make up some new secrets. That's what keeps me on the cutting edge. Not withholding information, but giving it all away for free. I don't compete with any of those guys. How can I possibly compete with your perspective? I can't. Your perspective is yours. My perspective is mine. That's not a competition. Clients want either yours or mine. I have to get in the door, make my perspective a little bit cooler than theirs, and that's how I get my business. Anything else you're curious about?
Can you tell us about working with your first client?
I can tell you about first clients and first pitches. My first pitches were all nightmares, except for one, my Showtime. The Showtime pitch was beautiful. It was everything you wanted to have. It was nurturing. It was encouraging. It was motivating. I mean, it was two women, vice president and a director, and they knew they had a sucker sitting in front of them. They knew they could get me to do anything for them at any price that they wanted to pay for it. And you know what? I was rich. They taught me everything. They gave me the step-by-step process as to how to get in the door, how to do it right, how to pitch. It took me a year, but I got in the door and I went in and it was beautiful. You know, that lasted almost a year until the vice president quit because they had a reshuffling and then, you know. But it was beautiful. I had a pitch once to another network which shall remain nameless. It was probably the most humbling, infuriating experience of my life. I went in, I did a pitch, I had an 8-pound laptop, 80-slide presentation. I mean, I was ready to knock them down. This one was the director. And she, you know, so I sat down, you know, we get past the you know, the niceties, and I sit down, and I, two slides in, maybe three, she says, hold on a second, I want to bring my intern in. So she sits the intern in there. I'm like, all right, cool, so we get started. At this time, I didn't have anybody who I can, you know, bring in with me. So I remember the Showtime pitch, I brought in my girlfriend. The second pitch was my friend. You know, you gotta bring somebody. Warm body. Just make it look like you're...
Why did you need to bring in people?
To make me look like, you know, you're so... I did not understand what my value was at the time. I simply thought that if I had more people in there, it would look like I was more professional and I could get more money out of it. So I brought in these warm bodies, misunderstanding what I was doing. And what she did was, after she brought her intern in, I'm like maybe 30 slides in, she starts dozing off. You know, on my 35th, 36th slide, she almost let out a snore. And I'm thinking, I stopped and asked, do you have any questions? And I was going right through this without any interruptions. And she's like, oh, no questions, I already know all this stuff. I'm like, so why am I presenting? Oh, this is good practice for my intern. I was done. I wrapped up the presentation, and I said, well, here you go. Do you have any questions? Just call me back. I went back home pissed beyond belief. Sent an email to her boss, called him up, asked him for another opportunity to present to him. And sure enough, he accepted. On the day of my presentation, it was a phone conference. She was in the room. So, my director here has briefed me on the proposal, and I don't know why we're even having this conversation. She had already poisoned his mind. I don't even know why I was in there. But, you know, I did my best, and sure enough, I was rejected. That was probably my best and worst experiences in there. I mean, from starting out. You know, the best ones are when I'm already, when they call me, I don't even have to worry about it. They call me, I want you to come in, take a look at this, how much, here you go, get started. That's the best one. That's happening more often than it used to happen. That's also being in this position. I don't simply just go out there for clients. I have to administer, I have to pay taxes, I hate the IRS, I have to recruit, I have to write constantly, I have to thought leadership type stuff, constantly do research studies. I mean, there's a lot more to just founding a firm than you know, being, going and looking for clients, which is one of the biggest distinctions you won't ever hear from other guys starting a firm. Again, most guys who start a firm, they come in with projects already in hand, with associates in hand. You know, they spend their time just hanging out, collecting the fee, not really doing any thought leadership or anything else. You know, they do whatever they really want to do. I have to do these things if I want to pay my rent. If you decide you want to pursue your firm, you know, in a larger company, you're probably not going to do any of this stuff. You're probably going to spend your 100 hours a week just looking at the same thing over and over and over and over. Talking to people, interviewing people, traveling. You got to get to the client site, you know. You might, within your third or fourth year, develop relationships, and that's what they want. They want you to develop those relationships, because guess what? Eventually, you're going to end up getting consulting, and you're going to want to work for that company that you had that great connection with. And when you work for that company, the first thing you're going to do is, I need a consultant around here. And you're going to hire your old company. It's fascinating. That doesn't just work within consulting. That works in every service profession. I remember not too long ago, just before Google went public, if you recall how that whole little thing happened, Google went public, big, humongous, innovative concept. Let's do an auction. Open everybody. Let's not hire the big banks. Who cares about those big banks? Oh, we need the big banks. Let's not give them too much business. The woman they hired to sort of initiate and lead that whole IPO process came out of CSFB, at the time CSF, Credit Suisse First Boston. Who do you think she hired to do the primary bulk of that work? Take a while, guys. Go ahead, CSFB, you said? Yes, that's who she hired. What does that tell you about, you know, your chances of being a success in corporate America? That's why you shouldn't even bother thinking about how successful you're going to be. You're going to be successful. What you really should think about is what you want. What will you exploit them for? They're going to exploit you no matter what. You know, they give you six figures if you're lucky, maybe five, high five if you're starting. You know, you're going to have a Stern degree, you're going to get a big shot. You're going to get out there with a five-figure salary. Okay, great. You're going to get it. That's assured. Even if you work at Make It Easy or at Blockbuster, you're still gonna get five figures, maybe not high five figures. There are laws to prevent, you know, minimum, below minimum wage employment. So you're gonna be successful no matter what you do. Successful, let me rephrase that. You're gonna make money no matter what you do. You have to define for yourself what success means for you. You wanna make money to support a future family. You wanna bring your families over from wherever they are, or send them back. you wanna run for office someday. You know, what do you want to do out of your life? How do you want to exploit the company you're at? And don't make it obvious. Nobody wants to hire a company knowing that you're going to exploit them. Nobody wants to hire you knowing you're going to exploit them. Don't make it obvious. But at least have that plan. Yes?
You touched on expanding your firm. I was just wondering, when and how did you go about like finding your partner? Is it who's going to join your company now? Looking for independent to
I'm looking for partners right now. I'm looking for folks who I want to hire to go, you know, find those larger accounts. But I am always recruiting. I always hire, I always recruit. Because my model is totally different. I'm not going to get into how I run my firm. My firm is, I have a pool of 80 associates that I work with. They grow, they fluctuate depending on project. But the way it works is completely different than the way the big firms work. I need people to help me do research for every project, but I can't afford to pay everybody high five figures sitting around waiting for work. So I have to come up with an alternative way of doing it. You can read about it. I published the method and the process. It's all online. You can check it out at your leisure. But growing it is a matter of getting more clients, not getting more people. It's a matter of finding less clients who pay more money, as opposed to opening up offices all over the world. You know, we have one office, but 80 people don't work from that office. You know, people work from wherever they want to work. Consulting is a business of ideas. You're not going to have an idea working 20 hours a day from the office. You're going to have an idea sleeping. You're going to have ideas while you're on the toilet. You're going to have an idea while you're with your woman or with your man, you know? That's when you have ideas. That's when you're right. Why am I going to pay you 17 hours? You're going to be miserable. You're not going to think on demand. You're not going to come up with ideas on demand. We're a service business. We're a knowledge worker. You don't learn, you don't teach, you don't have insights when I tell you to. Have an insight right now! No, it doesn't work that way. It doesn't matter how much money I pay you. If I pay you even more money, you're going to have less insight. Matter of fact, the more money I pay you, the less inclined you are to work. So I, based on that, I basically had to come up with a different way of running what I do. So growth is a matter of how many more clients I find. Not necessarily, or how many more clients other people find for me. And partnerships, before I started this business, I started three other businesses. So I can't say that my decision to start was purely, you know, out of nowhere. Each business I have partners for, each business we live in, I want to strangle partners. As far as I'm concerned, partners are codependent on each other. So they all have to, you know, work collaboratively to find clients. But I've realized my work ethic is completely different than almost everyone else I know. I can't work with most people I know, particularly people who are first year this, first year that. People who just constantly come up with an excuse as to why they can't be entrepreneurs, why they can't accept no money to do a job. You know, you're willing to volunteer for no money. Why can't you do this for no money? You're willing to do all kinds of nonsense, passions that you have for no money. Why can't you do this type of work for no money? So my work ethic was totally different. I couldn't find partners. Which is now why I'm looking for partners now. Now I'm in a different position, now I'm in a different place. Looking for partners is totally different. I have a different picture. So growth, you know, that's what it's all about. Everything I'm doing today will be for my children. You know, just like all those guys. None of those guys. Ironically, Marvin Bauer, the refounder of McKinsey, his son's a crackhead, so he could never actually give his business. He couldn't let him take over McKinsey, which is, you know, his claim to fame was that he gave his equity, $300 million worth of equity in McKinsey. He gave it to the partnership as a sign of generosity and how goodwill he is and how ethical and how professional he is to the business of consulting. No, his son was a cracker. Couldn't give his business to his son. What else is he going to do? You know, he's just going to die. He can't keep all his money. So he might as well give it back to the partnership. Anyway. That's how I'm growing. It's like a 40, 50 year plan, not just next year.
How's your degree from Stern, like, impacted anything?
It, I'm really supposed to not really say anything about this, but it hasn't at all. In fact, you nowhere on my resume, on my bio, will you find that I'm a graduate of this school. No one ever, in the, all this time I've been, you know, putting myself out there as a consultant, has ever asked me, what school did you go to? But nobody. Nobody cares. You know, you're gonna hire me because you like me. Because I'm telling you, I'm gonna make you CEO one day. Because I'm helping you get rid of a bunch of people you don't like. That's why you're gonna hire me. You don't care where in the school I went to. That has no bearing on anything. You don't care how many degrees I have, where I got them from, what I really know. You're gonna get me in your firm because I've written enough stuff to at least prove that I'm halfway decent enough for you to call me. You're gonna get me in there because I'm telling you, I'm gonna save you 30% on your calls, 40% on your calls. I'm gonna make you $10 million more. That's why you're gonna call me in. And at the end of the day, if you get sued, you're not gonna get paid. That's why you're gonna call me. But regrettably, from my experience, a college education hasn't really paid off. But I'm not supposed to say that, so you didn't hear that from me. Yes. I spend 90% of my time communicating, talking to people, phoning people, emailing people, just getting my thoughts out there. That's the only way. Most CEOs, if you notice, don't carry briefcases. What do they need briefcases for? They talk all day long. That's their job. You pay a CEO $20 million a year to do nothing more than talk. The man's a nincompoop, doesn't know anything. He doesn't know blue from red, and yet he's getting paid $20 million a year to just talk to people, talk to shareholders, talk to customers, talk to employees, talk to everybody. That's all he gets paid to do. Am I right, Andrew?
I'm here for, I have another half hour, so if you want to chat about anything. And if any of you would like some consulting magazine articles, this is one that I actually wrote and got, and they were generous enough to publish it. You know, I've got a few copies here, you can feel free. It's published on our website, so you can get them. And I do have business cards, but I'm not going to put them on the table. If you really, really want it, you got to ask for it. Thank you.
And also, this is from MCG. It's just a small gesture.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming down.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Thank you. I wish you sleep with the numbers.
Okay.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm kind of like trying to compete in kind of what I'm into. I feel like position look my body in psychology and astronomy and stuff like that. And I just find that there's skills that, as far as just kind of grasping the essence of how things work and being able to like come up with things that would fit a particular situation. I was trying to.
I have similar interests like you. Yeah. I'm interested in everything. You have all these interests, which is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Guess what? There's something that's actually similar in all these interests. Not the interest itself. It's
right.
Something about it.
Exactly.
Whether it's the fact that you're engaging in it, that it's a physically strenuous, it's intellectually stimulating, whatever the case, there's something that's common to all of them. And that thing is what you do. That's
right.
What you really do.
Right, exactly.
So you got to figure that out.
Yeah.
It might take a couple of years, but you'll figure it out. I start with pro-human. And just list them all out, you know, whenever I gotta make a decision.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've even, you know, gotten as far into doing that already, man. Just, as far as, like, you know, starting out, really, you know, I'd be very interested in kind of starting something.
The other thing I gotta tell you is it takes patience.
Yeah.
You're not gonna, I recommend you quit your job, you know, go on unemployment for a couple of months, figure it out.
Right.
But, I mean, I don't really recommend
right,
it.
Right.
And by the way, I recommend you actually go to school, get a degree. but that's the only way you'll figure it out. You can't be told, you can't be steered, you can't be encouraged. You got to really, really take your own time and reflect. I spend a lot of time hiking because it's the only time I can get away from the noise, from the crowds.
And stuff just occurs.
And, you know,
yeah, it's like, you know, when the light bulb goes on, you can't just force it to go
exactly.
On at random points.
That's exactly it. So you got to do that for yourself, and that's when you figure it out. But this is how I did it. You take the things that are similar in all your favorite activities,
the things that you're passionate about, and you realize you're not really passionate about the activity. Just that one thing about
something
it.
Something that really turns it on.
Right. And that's the thing. You can actually create your own label for that. You
know, oh, yeah. And an call abstraction that. To it.
Right.
Yeah.
And then figure out how to get paid from that.
That's true. Good point.
Right now,
okay.
I'm trying to
make sure.
Questions,
but
I really appreciate it.
All questions welcome.
Yeah.
I'm Steve, by the way.
Please meet you, Steve.
I have a question. Have you ever taken any classes in like entrepreneurship or
no,
plan?
I give classes.
You give classes? Okay. No, but when you were in college?
They didn't teach that when I was here.
Okay.
It only started after I left. Boy, did I feel jerked over. But I didn't set out to be
if
an
you
entrepreneur.
You had classes like that?
I still wouldn't take them. I didn't set out to be an entrepreneur. You gotta understand. Entrepreneur is just a label for something I was doing.
Right.
I set out to just not work for those guys. I set out to, you know what, if I can make money, I might as well make it for myself. That's what I set out to do.
Yeah.
You know, anger.
How does that differentiate from an entrepreneur?
Entrepreneurs could be, there's four different categories for I consider entrepreneurs. There's a lifestyle entrepreneur. They just go around saying, I'm an entrepreneur. You know, they just start stuff and leave.
Yeah.
There's guys who are, you know, they're entrepreneurs, but they don't really realize it because they got to work every day, like in that store.
Right.
Then there's manager entrepreneur. You know,
like
the guys. Right. There's different types of entrepreneurs. So that's based on that differentiation. You know, I didn't really understand how I was an entrepreneur. I simply said, I got to get paid. I got to pay my rent. Eventually, I got to stop not working and start working. I didn't think about it as an entrepreneur. I thought about it purely as, how can I get paid doing this thing I love to do? And then it just went from there.
Do you only work in New York City with clients?
New York and New Jersey.
Okay.
But I mean, you know, I get calls from all over the world. We have a big project in Brazil right now that came out of nowhere.
Right, right.
And you know, and I'm traveling to Brazil a couple of times a year.
Interesting. Yeah, can I have a card?
Yes.
Yeah. My name is Seth, right?
Good to meet you, Seth.
Thank you. Yeah, enjoy the presentation.
Are you just going to stare at me? Yes.
I got it. Now I'm less interested in management consulting.
Okay.
I'm more interested in how you got all these perspectives. Like, where did you learn to like see things differently?
I read a lot of stuff in isolation. I realized that, you know what, I can't live without reading the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal every day. I just started reading a lot. It was up to the point I was reading 3,000 newsletters every week. Then after I stopped reading that, I started reading books. I read at least one type of book like this once a month. I read a lot of magazines. I just talk to a lot of people. And, you know, you'd be surprised. Your brain automatically does it for you. You don't have to consciously make an effort to have a different perspective. You do it on your own. Eventually, you know, there will come a point where you just start asking yourself, why is it like this? Why is it like that? That's what drove me. Why is it like this? And you'll figure it out. You'll come with your own way of thinking, your own perspective. You know, you just simply have to let yourself do that. I'm not saying you should go do these things. This is what I did. You might be a lot smarter than me, and you might figure it out quicker, you know? It is possible. Maybe, I don't know. But, you know, that's how it happens. So, again, you got a lot of interest, a lot of hobbies, figure it out. What do you like to do? And then pursue that.
Because that's what drove me to management consulting. Like, they actually, you know, they're the ones who create ideas and have new perspectives that nobody has. So it's like different from many
there's probably others. If you're talking about whole firm, maybe one or two guys come up with the ideas. Everybody else just regurgitates it, sells it. McKinsey's primary dominance came from a book written 20 years ago, Good to Great, Built to Last. Ever heard of those books? It's written by two of their consultants who had PhDs, by the way. After they wrote the books, they were too famous to be consultants, so they quit. But McKinsey owned the rights to the books. So they went around telling everybody, we know how to do it. We know how to do it. 20 years later, they were on top, selling that one concept, how to, you know, change your organizational culture. Management theories in management science occur once every 20 to 30 years. So, you know, I do not believe that just anyone could come up with new ideas, which is a great opportunity if you are the idea man to come up with ideas. I did a little survey once where I looked at all of the potential clients in this city alone. Out of all the public companies, 85% of them are money changers. Banks, you know, some sort of insurers or mortgagers or something. 15% are actual, honest-to-goodness businesses. What does that tell you about the dearth of ideas in this city? if 85% of these public companies are just companies who give you money? And the rest are just the guys with the ideas. Oh, yeah. You can have any idea, and it'll make you money.
It's New York City.
It's no, but it's not just New York. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, most cities, their only claim to fame is that one company that hires everybody in town, you know? That's it. Ideas are rare, especially ideas that get executed. So, you got an idea, and you execute it, you make them a lot of money. And you'll be very successful at it. So, you just got to figure out what that is.
Do you think it would be like interesting for like a student such as ourselves to maybe go to like a local pizza shop and just like ask them if we could examine their business and see if they can make it better, like pro bono?
Yeah, that's not unusual. I've heard a lot of schools encourage their students to do that all the time. When you get to, I mean, maybe as a senior you might start doing that, you know, already. As an MBA student, you're definitely going to be told to do that. But yeah, if you want to do it right now, go ahead and do it right now. Analysis is nothing more than what you say it is. If you want to sit there and measure all the people coming in, count them, find out how long they stand in the queue, find out how long it takes for their meal to be prepared, all that stuff. Any question you want answered within that business, that's an analysis. There is no format, there's no template, nothing that says your perspective, based on your methodology, is not a viable analysis or viable study. So anything you want to do, anywhere you want to do it, you can say that gives you your experience. That's your qualification. And that's your, you know, that's how you do it. So yeah, if you want to go to a pizza shop, no, think bigger. Go to the park. Figure out why Washington Square Park, a public park, makes NYU $100 million a year. How the hell is that possible? It's a public park. Figure that out.
Does it? I don't know.
You'd be surprised at a lot of stuff you don't know.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, if that could happen, you know, think about what else.
Seems like everything is just research.
Yeah, well, how else are you going to find the answer?
Yeah.
You want to find a job, you're going to research.
Just like marketing.
You want to have a baby, you're going to do research. You want to go bang that chick, you're going to do research.
Right.
I'm not banging that chick. I heard what she did.
Yeah. In the long term, since you're obviously very young,
thank you.
Do you think in the long term you're going to start like a traditional business, or do you think you'll stay in consulting?
What's non-traditional about consulting?
Well, in a sense,
it's 100 years.
But I mean, you mentioned at one point that like something get tired of consulting. I mean, I don't know if you're referring to yourself. But,
no, I will never get tired from doing what I enjoy to do. I picked this. I chose it. I made it up. How could I possibly? This is my passion. Would you get bored from your passion?
What's the long term goal? Or like what you feel like you're working towards?
I'm doing what I will be doing 20, 30 years from now, except in a larger scale. I'll be doing it for whole countries as opposed to just a city. I'll be doing it for whole, you know, mega corporations as opposed to just one company. You know, it's just a natural progression. Eventually, one day, I'm going to be snapping my fingers and presidents are going to be calling me. And that's just, you know, who knows? I mean, there's no telling what could happen. This is a small planet. I might be the guy who finances the next adventure to the next planet. Who knows? That's what being in this position lets you do. Lets you explore anything you want to explore. And put it in the realms of consulting.
You ever worry about like running out of ideas?
Well, Einstein had all of his greatest ideas at 27, 28, right? After that, he was just basically washed up. He's just a legend after that. He didn't have to come up with any more ideas, frankly. I mean, everything he came up with, like four big ones at 27, and a lot of stuff before that, you know? Surprisingly, I read somewhere that he was working at the patent office as he became this genius. But anyway, do I ever worry about coming up with ideas? No, because I give my ideas away for free. So I force myself to constantly come up with new stuff. You know, and you know, I have shocked myself to realize that most of the stuff I've come up with, other guys have come up with 20, 30, 40 years ago. No, they know about it. I didn't know about it. Because I never went to any, I didn't go to grad school, I don't have a PhD, I never worked at any of these big firms. So because I don't know that these ideas were already, somebody else came up with these ideas, here I am coming up with ideas that somebody else came up with. But that's not what matters to me. What matters is that I actually came up with it without those degrees, without those experiences. So I'm just building on the stuff I already came up with. So knowing now that I haven't come up with anything new, simply just a different way of saying it, I am now, you know, I just keep doing that. I don't think I will ever run out of ideas because people are all stupid. You know, I could basically say anything, it'll sound like a new idea. You, of course, are not stupid, but, you know, most people you encounter are going to be less intelligent than yourself. And that's just the way of the world. So I don't worry about that. I mean, you know, the only thing I really worry about is just
having too much fun. Eventually, I'm just going to, oh my God, this is too much fun. There's not enough time to have all the fun I want to have. Welcome very much.
How did you become such an effective communicator?
Articles.
Oh, articles.
What?
How did you become such an effective communicator?
Because I'm passionate about what I'm talking about. I love what I do. I love what I'm talking about. If you don't have that passion, how can you ever be expected to talk about something?
But how do you find passion? Like, I know this is like a stupid thing to say, but...
No, no, it's
not. I'll log out because I have to head for class.
Oh, sure. How do you find it? If, I mean... You don't really find it, I guess. Whatever you enjoy doing. Here's two ways to find it. The obvious is the one I told you. Whatever you enjoy doing. The second, not so obvious, is whatever you hate. Think about this. Anyone ever piss you off? Hurt you? Really got you so freaking mad? You just want to do something about it, but you don't know what to do. That's passion. It's just a different form of passion. You know? So one of the reasons I do this and I talk about my, you know, my disregard for public higher ed education in this system is because of my own higher ed education. I feel ripped off. I feel jerked over. How dare those people tell me I'm not good enough to get a job out there because I have this degree? Or worse yet, how dare NYU take credit for my brain? It's my brain, not their brain. They want to get money from me, ask me for this, ask me for that. What are they doing for me? Nothing. So I get upset about it. And when you get upset and there's nothing you seem you can able to do, you figure it out. That's your passion. It is either or. You know, love and hate are the two most powerful emotions. You know, complacency and ignorance, those are the least useful emotions. Sadness, you know, you got to be pissed off or really, really happy about something in order for you to really go out there and convince others of the same thing.
In regards to communication skills, was it like trial and error, or did you find like biographies about, you know, great orators?
I hate reading about how to do something. You just gotta figure it out. I can't say it was trial and error either. Because even though you may know something, you might deal with an uncomfortable audience. You might deal with an environment which is not suited to you. You basically just gotta go out there and do it. You know, just do it. If you're nervous about doing it, well, that's why you're passionate. If you're passionate, you're not gonna be nervous. You're gonna have, and I don't like to look at giving it a speech. I like to have a conversation. You have a conversation, things go well. Again, I'm slightly at an advantage because I've met so many people, I've spoken to so many people. The more people you speak to, the easier it becomes. But eventually, it's just a matter of, you know, just go out there and do it.
Hello?
Yeah, there is no secret sauce, there's no, you know, nothing. It's just, you basically just do it.
Can I write the titles of the book?
Yes, you can write them. And there's like a few more, but they were too heavy, I didn't want to bring them.
Oh, okay. How did you... Like, how did you find about this book?
You go into Amazon, right? And you press search for consulting, and that comes up.
You just like read everything without...
Everything. If it has the word consulting in it, I read it. Yes.
Can I get one too?
Yes.
My name is Jonathan.
Pleased to meet you, Jonathan. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. Perry?
Perry? Yeah. Pleased to meet you, Perry. It's a pleasure.
If you want, go to the student council.
John, I changed my spell on that. Thank you.
You're welcome.